Hello, podcasters, and welcome once again to this series of podcasts brought to you in association with Kilkenny Library Services and the Government's Decade of Centenaries Fund through Kilkenny County Council. My name is Owen Swinton Welsh, and in these podcasts, we explore different aspects of Kilkenny's revolutionary era history. Much like we did for 1920 and 1921, we will focus on the key events of 100 years ago in 1922. First up, in this podcast, we will take a look at the formal handover of Kilkenny Military Barracks by the British Crown Forces to the Provisional Government, which took place on Tuesday afternoon, the 7th of February 1922. I think we shouldn't underestimate just how important this event was. Maybe not in terms of the day-to-day life of Kilkenny folk, but just in terms of the visual impact of seeing the British Army quite literally march away. And then seeing a slightly haphazard but well-drilled ensemble of dedicated local lads marching in and taking possession of the barracks. These were the local IRA who had been branded as murderers by the British government just a year before, but now they were being handed the keys to the barracks. One newspaper said dramatically that it was the first time since Cromwell was here in Kilkenny in 1650 that Kilkenny did not have a British garrison in situ. For those of you not familiar with Kilkenny, the barracks is still there today, the main entrance being at Ballybocht Street and the Castlecomber Road. People will know the wall that runs along the Castlecomber Road there. The 3rd Infantry Battalion, nicknamed the Bloods, are currently based there. Actually, the Bloods are the oldest units of the Irish Army still in existence today. They were founded in 1924 and originally based in Donegal, hence why their logo still has the O'Neill Red Hand of Ulster on the crest. The barracks was formally renamed James Stephens Barracks in the 1960s, in honour of course of the Kilkenny native James Stephens, who founded the Irish Republican Brotherhood, aka the Fenians, in the 1850s. Although there have been different barracks in Kilkenny through the centuries, the current barracks complex was built between 1800 and 1803. It served as a base for different regiments of the British Army up until the time we're talking about here in 1922. So for everyone alive in 1922 in Kilkenny, the barracks had always been there, part of the furniture, so to speak. Many a Kilkenny man would have signed up at the barracks over the years. Of course, when it was first built, recruitment to the army was very much needed. The UK was in turmoil as the Napoleonic Wars were happening at the time, leading of course to the Battle of Waterloo in 1815. The worry of a Napoleonic invasion of Ireland was a very real fear at the time. More closer to home, it was only a few years since the 1798 rebellion, which saw fighting in County Kilkenny, so this was another reason to strengthen the military presence in the area. Then, throughout the 19th century, there were numerous conflicts which involved the British Army, most notably the Crimean and Boer Wars in South Africa, where many Kilkenny men fought. Indeed, the expansion of the British Empire during the 19th century meant there were soldiers needed across the empire, India being the most obvious example. Then, just at the start of the revolutionary period in question here, from 1914, many local Kilkenny folk would have enlisted at the barracks to fight in the First World War. However, in 1922, it was wholly an English unit who were in situ at Kilkenny, which probably made it easier for people to wave them away. Soldiering was a decent career option for many Kilkenny inhabitants. It provided a steady wage, along with a sense of adventure. It meant a person from a working class background in Kilkenny had a chance to go to far-flung corners of the world, an opportunity they would not have had outside the army, albeit there was, of course, a chance of dying during this aggressive adventure. This leads us to another point. The barracks would have been a boon for the local economy, right from the very beginning of its existence. Feeding the men meant excellent business for the local farmers, with everything from meat, vegetables, bread, butter and milk required. There was also a whole industry around the equine side of things, with horses needing feeding, watering and being generally looked after. Someone else had to make, clean or fix the uniforms. Cobblers were needed to fix the shoes and boots and so on and so on. So it was only fair to say that there were many people happy with the army presence in Kilkenny, even if it was just for purely economic reasons. So as the British Army moved out, there was most likely some people around Kilkenny nervous about their departure for purely financial reasons. Would the new crowd, we'll call them the Free State for ease of use here, have the same amount of money to spend? That was the question. It certainly wouldn't in the intermediate term anyway. So that's the general, very quick synopsis of Kilkenny Military Barracks and how it fitted into life in Kilkenny. Now, just to set the scene of the early months of 1922 now, the treaty signed in London in December 1921, just 2 months before the events here, had been ratified by Dáil Éireann in January. Although many in the political side were very much opposed to it, civil war wasn't a foregone conclusion at this stage. Just a week after the treaty vote, Dublin Castle, the British administrative headquarters in Ireland, was formally handed over to the provisional government. On the 1st of February 1922, just a week before the Kilkenny handover, the first formal handover of a British barracks took place, with Beggars Bush Barracks in Dublin being transferred. By any measure, this was a rapid course of events. The general public, by and large, at least tacitly supported the treaty, as the alternative was a return to fighting the British, which was seen as a worse option. However, any people on the fence must have been won over, as they could see with their own eyes now the Crown forces marching away from Kilkenny barracks and barracks around the country. This was a striking visual demonstration of the changes that were afoot in Ireland. People could literally witness it from their front door, and not just reading the ins and outs of the treaty from a newspaper. Throw into the mix the disbandment of the RIC, another presence in everyone's lives since birth, and it must have been beyond comprehension for some. For those opposed to the treaty, the British Army packing up and leaving wasn't good for them, and not just in terms of propaganda. They would much rather rekindle a war, if needs be, with the British rather than starting a civil war. Removing the British targets from the country meant that this was not going to be possible. It is likely this was something the powers that be in Westminster and Dublin had considered, hence the quick evacuation of Crown forces from rural parts of the proposed Free State. At this time in February 1922, the head of the Kilkenny Brigade IRA was George O'Dwyer from Coon. He was the most high-ranking IRA man in Kilkenny at this time, and he would be responsible for organising the handover. It is important to note that, during February 1922, the army of the proposed Free State were still going by the title the Irish Republican Army, IRA, just as they had been since 1919, and thus it was the IRA who took charge of the barracks from their British counterparts. Later they would become known as the National Army or the Regular Army, and later again known as the Free State Army. George O'Dwyer sent out words to the 9 different Kilkenny battalions that made up the Kilkenny Brigade, requesting them to send men for the handover of the barracks. In this way, every corner of County Kilkenny would be represented in the historic handover. Now, like everything army related, there was a hierarchy. The main marching units up front, who mostly had their own IRA Irish Volunteer uniforms and also had rifles, would be made up of the Kilkenny Brigade staff, number one, along with officers, that is the leadership, of the 9 different Kilkenny battalions that made up the brigade. Members of the 2 flying columns that were active in Kilkenny during the War of Independence were also invited to be part of this main group if they wanted to attend. Finally, members of the Clara Company, just outside Kilkenny, were given preference in this leading group as well, as they had volunteered to take it in turns to stay overnight in the barracks during the following weeks until an official Free State battalion or section could be installed in the barracks. On the actual day, there was about 42 men in this main party led by O'Dwyer. They were followed by regular IRA members who had various states of uniform and none. Most wore normal clothes and just put on the balandiers over their shoulder. This held the bullets you'd see in the photographs, and brought whatever half-decent guns they had to hand to march with. Now, the main mustering point for the larger group, that's the privates of the IRA we'll call them, was St. James's Park, owned by the Agricultural Society, and near the present-day St. Luke's Hospital. It's also, people will know, where the Greyhound racing track is in Kilkenny now. Although St. James's Park is less than 2 kilometres from the barracks, they took a more ceremonial route through the city centre, going via High Street. The group of 42 officers and column men mustered separately in the market yard, currently where the Dunn Stores car park is by the River Nore. When the larger group came in from James's Park, they halted around the courthouse area to allow the 42 men of the marching units lead them from the High Street Parliament Street Junction. It should also be said that the whole assembly was led by the St. Patrick's Brass and Reed Band, that band still in existence today, of course. Passing by the Tulsel City Hall, they saluted the Mayor Peter DeLucri and Thomas Tracy, the latter being the OC of the Kilkenny IRA Brigade before his imprisonment in November 1920. They also marched past number 13 High Street over Miss Farrell's newsagents, since the truce to Kilkenny IRA Brigade had taken up residence above the shop and used it as their headquarters office. It was here James Massey Delaney, the IRA liaison officer, organised the practicalities of the handover, along with other matters in communication with the British military. He had been doing the liaison work since the truce the previous summer. The IRA men then marched up the parade and waited there for word from the British that they were ready to leave the barracks. Aptly enough, the parade got its name because it was a place soldiers could parade up and down. After about half an hour, word came through from the British commander of the barracks that everything was ready to go. All the IRA men fell in and proceeded to march up Rose Inn Street and over John's Bridge. As they came near the barracks, they had to stop for a second or two as three Crossley tenders with soldiers exited and wisely turned left onto Ballybox Street instead of driving through the crowds. Many of the parents of these mostly young IRA men also travelled into town for the day to witness their young sons marching into the barracks. It must have been an emotional and a proud day. Some of these parents probably weren't happy with their children's activities during the previous years, mostly out of fear and worry for their safety, it must be said. These young men must have felt vindicated in the path they took, that it had led to such a day, a kind of a told you so moment for the parents. For the ordinary Kilkenny folk, not directly involved with events of the previous years, witnessing the withdrawal of Crown forces from the country was perhaps the most tangible and visual effect of the treaty that had just been signed. In other words, it made it all very real. To move out the Crown forces from Kilkenny, special trains were required to transport the 214 men still in the barracks on that final day, 7th of February 1922. Special trains were also needed to transport the 145 horses, 75 wagons, 6 18-pounder artillery guns and about 60 tons of baggage from Kilkenny to Dublin for onward embarkation to England through Dublin Port. Some of the artillery may have gone to the Curragh for a period as well. It was Captain Fulham who formally took control of the barracks on behalf of the provisional government. He had come down from Dublin that day. He immediately handed control of the barracks over to Kilkenny IRA Brigade OC, George O'Dwyer, who was, of course, as we said, the highest ranking Kilkenny man there. Just 9 months previously, O'Dwyer was attempting to attack these very same soldiers as the leader of the 1st Kilkenny ASU, or Flying Column, most notably at Oscarity Woods and Coolbawn. Now he was taking the barracks over from them. What a difference a year makes. The events of the day were undoubtedly also tinged with emotion for some on both sides, as they were now coming face to face with the people that killed or injured their friends and comrades during the troubles of the previous years. For the general public, the evacuation of Crown forces on that Tuesday afternoon was a joyous occasion, with most shops shutting their doors as early as they could, as if it was a public holiday. Some of the business and pub owners on John Street were perhaps happier than most to see the departure of the Crown forces. A number of inebriated soldiers had smashed windows along John Street the previous two nights, in an overzealous response, shall we say, to finally leaving Kilkenny. For others, it must also have been a time for reflection. Some of those marching to Kilkenny Barracks on that day in February 1922 had journeyed much the same route 6 years earlier, when they were arrested by the military after Easter week 1916. Martin Keeley had been one of those prisoners in 1916, and his brother John had died on that enforced march on John Street. He had been ill for some time before that. Now Martin Keeley himself was leading a section of IRA men into Kilkenny Barracks to take possession. What a day for him. The events of day were also reported in the Kilkenny Moderator newspaper, which I think gives a good sense of what happened. Quote, about 3:30 o'clock, a detachment of IRA went into occupation of the military barracks. The men were in charge of Commandant O'Dwyer. They formed up in St. James's Park and, headed by the St. Patrick Brass Band, marched through the city to the military barracks. The scene along the route from St. James's Park, and especially at the entrance to the barracks, was one of jubilation and enthusiasm. Crowds thronged the streets, and the arrival of the Irish soldiers at the barracks was a signal for a great outburst of cheering from the assembled crowd. Inside the barracks, the soldiers were put through various evolutions by Commandant O'Dwyer, and the precision with which they executed the different orders of their commandant impressed the crowd who had gathered in the square of the barracks. The walls and doors and some of the sleeping apartments, which were left in anything but a tidy condition, bore various inscriptions. These were left by the British soldiers. One was, Éireann Gurbrá, when the fields are white with daisies we'll return, which was a quote from a popular First World War song, and another was, gone but not forgotten, end quote. Now, there was a bit of a rigmarole about flags. The British refused to allow the tricolour to be placed on their flagpole, so on the day as the IRA marched into the barracks, the Union Jack was ceremoniously taken down before the flagpole was toppled over by the British that were there. The pole had been sawed 3/4 of the way through at the base beforehand, so it took little to pull it over. Now, this is something that happened with barracks all over the country as the British left. It may look like sour grapes, and there was probably a bit of that, but there was a long-standing tradition in the military that a flagpole should never fly the flag of an opposing force, hence the chop down. The IRA were made aware of this beforehand, and so in response, Eamon Mulrooney from the Dunbell IRA company had cut down a perfectly straight deal tree. He dressed it and transported it to the entrance of the barracks to act as the flagpole. With the help of others from the company, they dug a hole and hoisted the pole using horses' ploughing reins as the pulley lever. As the IRA men entered the grounds that day, the Irish tricolour was raised. This evoked great cheers from the crowds watching at the entrance. The Kilkenny People newspaper reported events of the day as follows. Quote, at about 2 o'clock on Tuesday, a large body of men representing the Kilkenny Brigade IRA mobilised at St James's Park, and having got into military formation, a triumphal march took place through the streets of the city to the military barracks. The sidewalks along the route of the procession were thronged with people from the city and county, many of whom who waved flags, and cheers were raised for the young soldiers marching past. The procession was headed by the St. Patrick's Brass Band, who played national airs along the route. About 42 men drawn from the various battalions of the Kilkenny Brigade under the command of Commandant George O'Dwyer and armed with rifles and bayonets marched after the band, and a large body of the Kilkenny Battalion IRA also took part. Long before the arrival of the troops, large numbers assembled at the military barracks to witness the triumphal entry. Many houses in Barrack Street and the neighbourhood exhibited Sinn Féin colours, that's the green, white and orange, in honour of the unique occasion. To the accompaniment of martial music, the barrack gates were flung open by the guard placed in charge earlier in the day. The entrance of the first contingent of the Irish National Army was the signal for a tremendous outburst of cheering from the vast gathering assembled outside the barracks. After the entrance of the troops, the general public were admitted, and a spectacle as the troops marched through the barrack square was one that will be remembered with pride by all who had the pleasure of witnessing it. The splendid military bearing of our young soldiers was warmly commented on by many of those present, who included the Mayor of Kilkenny, Alderman Peter DeLucri, as well as Mr. Sean Gibbons, Chairman, and several representatives of Kilkenny County Council and other bodies in the county, and of course a number of clergy. Having undergone some military evolutions, the troops, with the exception of a small party detailed to occupy the barracks, were dismissed and the barracks cleared. For the present, and until final arrangements are completed, the garrison will be under the command of Vice Commandant Brennan, 9th Battalion Kilkenny Brigade. End quote. Interestingly, the man who was left in charge of the barracks that first night, Richard Brennan of Knockanure Muncoin, would later in the spring switch to the anti-treaty side. He was firing against Free State soldiers from Kilkenny Castle in May 1922, just 3 months later. During the initial weeks in February, as mentioned, it was the men from the Clara IRA company who took turns staying in the barracks overnight. James Comerford, a 22-year-old IRA captain from Coon, who marched into the barracks that day in the lead group, vividly recalled in later life the events of that day. Quote, "Crowds which had packed narrow Rose Inn Street managed to stand three deep by standing shoulder to shoulder at each side of the street. IRA stewards shut off all traffic, horses, carts and motor cars from Rose Inn Street. We got a great hand and ringing cheers from the tremendous crowd of men, women and children of all ages. Going up John Street, the brass band with gusto played old favourites as the Boys of Wexford, God Save Ireland, Who Fears to Speak of Easter Week and the Boys of Kilkenny. That span of 54 years does not dim my memory of that event. Right now, I can again see the joyful faces of the packed crowds of men, women and children on High Street, Rose Inn Street and John Street. Again, I can hear the clapping of thousands of hands and the ringing of cheers from hundreds of throats. The noise from the cheers and the applause grew louder in a rising crescendo. The days of February 7, 1922 was regarded by most Kilkenny people as the greatest day of political jubilation seen and felt in Kilkenny City since the days of the Kilkenny Confederation in October 1642. End quote. The following month, in March, a celebratory party was held in the barracks with many of the local dignitaries invited. Mayor Peter de Lucri, who was jailed during the Troubles and who would become a Free State Senator at the end of 1922, summed up the swiftness of the changes taking place. Quote, "I do not think that any of us a few short months ago ever thought, not even in our wildest dreams, that Irish soldiers would soon occupy the Kilkenny barracks." End quote. Mayor de Lucri's brother, Larry, provided some of the singing entertainment with the accompaniment of an orchestra. The night entertainment was finished with the singing of the by then very popular tune, The Soldier's Song, which of course would later be translated into Irish and become the country's national anthem around Navin. 2 weeks prior to the evacuation of Kilkenny military barracks, the abode of the infamous A Company of Auxiliaries, Woodstock House and Inistig was their base, was also evacuated. The RIC police were also disbanded by the British government later that month. In early March, Castlecomer Barracks was evacuated by the Crown Forces. By mid-March 1922, George O'Dwyer issued a proclamation stating that as the forces of the British Crown, both military and police, and every vestige and symbol of enemy power and authority have disappeared from Kilkenny City and County, the onus of maintaining law and order devolves for the present on the Irish Republican Army. End quote. What a change in just a few months. And it was great seeing the current Defence Forces marking the centenary of the handover of the barracks on Sunday the 6th of February 2022. The 3rd Battalion marched from the Kilkenny Castle grounds to James Stephens Barracks, it must be said in much the same route as their compatriots 100 years ago. They even had the St. Patrick's Brass Band leading them, just like their forefathers had in February 22. It was an impressive sight for those who witnessed this, and it was a great way to mark the occasion. It made me think of all the young lads who made their way to the barracks in 1922 in their Sunday best, with their bandoliers over their shoulder and a gun if they were lucky. Contrast that with the present day and the immaculately dressed and equipped Defence Forces in their formal attire. Such a change. After a relaying ceremonies for the centenary, they had an open day in the barracks, something very similar to 100 years ago, where Kilkenny folk could go have a nosy around the barracks complex, which was something they would not have usually been able to do. I also wonder what those IRA men 100 years ago would make of the fact that their army was now doing peacekeeping duties around the world. Ireland is actually sending its soldiers to other corners of the world. A lot has certainly changed in 100 years, and Ireland has definitely come a long way. Now, I think that is where we leave it for today. Just to thank you all once again for listening, and don't forget to join your local library to avail of all the brilliant free resources. Until next time.